for the week of August 30th, 2020. This is Showbiz Sandbox, episode 508, the podcast that brings you all the dirt on the news making headlines around the entertainment world. In Los Angeles, I'm Jay Sperling Reich.
And at the AMC Summit 16 in Birmingham, Alabama, I'm Michael Giltz.
Now, is it still an AMC or was it an AMC?
It is an AMC, and I went to a movie in a movie theater.
Can I just say how funny it is that, like, back when this whole thing started and then, like, in the midst of it, you were like, there's no way I'm going to a movie theater until there's a vaccine. And meanwhile, I was like, I'm going to be there the first day. I'm going to open the doors. I'm going to make them let me turn the key to open the doors. And, like, in the end, you go first.
And do you know why?
Because you actually have movie theaters that are open and California does not and never will ever again.
Because I was obsessively checking showtimes during the day to see how many tickets were selling and what was going on and how many people were showing up for what, right? Back with, you know, Back to the Future and Rocky, whatever, just to see what was happening, how, what sort of interest there was locally at least. And I noticed they didn't sell a single ticket to The Personal History of David Copperfield at the Late Show, at the 8:15 show at the Summit, at the AMC Vestavia, which is the kind of Barca Lounger theater. They sold like 6 or 8 tickets, and it's a much smaller theater, and I'm not going there. But nobody, there was nobody, not a single ticket. And I'm like, well, that I'll do.
Yeah.
It's a private screening. That does not pose a risk. I feel pretty comfortable doing that. So I waited the last minute. I kept checking. I'm like, no tickets sold. Notice I went in. 8:20, I bought a ticket. I bought popcorn and soda because I'm like, what the heck? It's the first time in 8 months I have gone to a movie. The last time I went to a movie in a movie theater was in December of 2019 to see 1917 and Little Women.
Wow.
It's been more than 8 months. That hasn't happened since I was 8 years old. If then, I have not gone up 6 months, 8 months without seeing a movie. My entire life, I have seen one play in 2020. I've seen one film, The Personal History of David Copperfield. I haven't been to a single concert. I mean, that's just unbelievable. But I went, I walk into the theater. For some reason, they didn't have the names of the movies on the screens. You know how you walk down a multiplex and it says, you know, Star Wars, 7:15 or whatever. They didn't have that working. I don't know why they didn't bother, but they told me Theater 3, and I went down to Theater 3 and I went in, and there was someone in there. I'm like, oh, heck. I think I went into the wrong theater. I go back. No, that's the right theater. Oh, well, there was one woman in the theater. I'm like, well, one person. She sat way down in the bottom left. I sat way up at the top right in the back row, which is where I was going to sit anyway. And I had my popcorn and my soda, and I watched David Copperfield. And the movie I risked my life for? Not that good. it was overhyped at Toronto. It's not a close call. I love David Copperfield. It's a great novel. It's a great cast and got very good reviews. But I think it was one of those festival overreactions. To me, it wasn't a close call. It was very forced and labored, the humor, the stuff. I didn't mind the meta flourishes or some modern leaps from scene to scene. That wasn't the problem for me. It just, everything was obvious and not a good movie. And it was kind of an ugly movie. They just didn't like any of the characters, even the good ones, you know, like Dickens has a lot of grotesque and evil people and strange people and quirky people, but they're all human. And there's a certain warmth and humanity in it. Even if you're dealing with people who are miserable or strange and weird, not in this movie. It was sort of, it didn't like anybody, barely even David Copperfield. So,
well, was the theater crowded at all? I mean, with people seeing other movies?
No. The place was dead empty. Dead empty.
Wow.
During the day, in the afternoon, early evening, there are some people seeing movies. But at 8 o'clock at night, nobody's bothering. And of course, Copperfield is sort of, it was hoped for a little bit modest commercial hopes, but it's an art house film. It's an older adult film. And those are surely the last people who want to go. Tenet will be full. I'm not going to see Tenet in a movie theater. I will head to the drive-in an hour away to see Tenet and Wonder Woman 1984. I'm not going to a theater for that. But if you keep the theater empty and I'm the only person, then I'll go.
Well, you might not be able to see Tenet in a drive at a drive-in because, of course, they're not distributing the film to drive-ins.
Oh, they're not at all?
Correct.
Oh, why?
I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I read a story where they weren't doing it and there was a big brouhaha.
Oh, well, I mean, maybe he thinks the sound and picture quality isn't good enough for him.
I don't know.
But yeah. Oh, that's a nightmare. That's the only way I'm going to see that movie. Oh, well.
well, I'm not going to see it at all unless I fly to Las Vegas.
Well, but you wouldn't want to go inside a movie theater with a crowded full theater, would you?
No, not really. And well, I can tell you,
that's not a good idea.
Most of the movie theaters are not crowded. Even in the big IMAX in Toronto, they only had, I mean, when you looked at the seats that you could sit in, I was like, wow, why bother opening? You have like 200 seats, you're selling 50 of them.
Right. That's still a lot of people in a room for 2-3 hours. Yeah, I don't go to indoor dining, so I'm not going to go to a movie theater and sit there for 3 hours with a bunch of other people. I'm sorry.
Which is why you should probably only stay home and listen to podcasts where you can't catch the coronavirus or COVID or whatever. Yeah.
What are we going to... Yeah, that's funny. 200,000 people dead. Make jokes, Michael. Oh, what are we going to talk about this week?
This week on Showbiz Sandbox, we are actually excited that movies are playing in movie theaters around the world, as you heard from Michael. And we're hoping, of course, there won't be an upsurge in COVID-19 linked to them. Now, speaking of movies, the AMC chain, which Michael was at over the weekend, they are selling off some hard tops, some movie theaters, some multiplexes, but they want to buy back some that are here in the U.S. So they're selling some, they're buying some. Or if you're confused, well, just hold on, we'll explain. Also, the Academy Museum devoted to film has hit another roadblock, and this time it's not about construction delays. On Inside Baseball, we look at an explosion of changes at the major talent agencies here in Hollywood. As if the battle with the Writers Guild of America wasn't enough, they're now facing an exodus of top talent. And we're not talking about the actual creatives in front of the camera or even above the line talent. We're talking about the agency's employees. Of course.
Agents are boring, Sydney. Boring.
Yes, exactly. Now, as always, during Big Deal or Big Whoop, we'll discuss some of the week's top headlines. But first, as always, we turn it over to entertainment journalist extraordinaire Michael Giltz to fill us in on last week's box office. And yes, box office, because we have a big, fat smash hit on our hands.
That's right. And it's not called Tenet. It's called The 800. We're looking at box office around the world. And as I believe some of the trades made a point of saying, in fact, doing an entire article devoted to this fact, the big movie in North America or the big movie from Hollywood isn't always the biggest movie in the world. There are Bollywood films and Korean films and Chinese films that have topped the worldwide box office. We've been talking about this for years. It's one of the raison d'etre of our show, and it's certainly proven today. The number one film around the world is, again, The 800, the Chinese war epic from World War II. It grossed $141 million this week. It grossed $262 million worldwide and counting. That is the biggest movie in the world. At number two, another Chinese film, Love You Forever. This is a Chinese dramatic romance. It has grossed $60 million since it debuted on Tuesday, which is the Chinese equivalent of Valentine's Day. We got more to talk about that movie just below, but let's continue with the chart. So the number one film around the world grossed $141 million. At number two, it grossed $60 million. At number three is Christopher Nolan's film Tenet. Obviously, not playing in a huge worldwide open. That's why we don't make a big deal about comparing one movie to another. If you're in 10 territories as opposed to 60, well, you're going to make less money. Tenet did very well everywhere it opened, $54 million worldwide in 9 territories, smaller territories, but nonetheless in 9 territories, it set a record for a Christopher Nolan film. Just as The 800 has done in China, it has dominated the local box office wherever it plays. You can make good money, but you're also going to suck up 70, 80, 90% of the box office if and when you do so, because not every theater is open. And they're not on full capacity. So you
and there's hardly any movies in the you know that are being released. So
right, but you're making $54 million and you're dominating the screen count. You know, as we'll see in China, you know, you can't do that. So here's what happened in China, and we'll get to that now, I guess. In China, Love You Forever opened up on Tuesday, and it made a record $40 million in one day, which is, I believe, a single day record for all of China. So that's the most money grossed by a film in a single day, $40 million. How did it do it? It did it because The 800 handed over a bunch of screens for that one day. It was popular. It did well. But on Wednesday, a lot of those screens were taken back. So on Tuesday, it made $40 million. And then Wednesday through Sunday, it made another $20 million. That's not because people didn't like it, but because it simply couldn't play on as many screens as it needed to.
And there's still a limited capacity too, from my, it's my
right. And then the 800 took back a lot of its screens. So it churned out a ton of money. This, we made $141 million in the last 7 days. So what would Love You Forever have done in normal circumstances? Is Disney going to hand over a bunch of screens to Warner Brothers for their movie for opening day? Of course not. So there's going to be a lot of tension when you have Tenet playing and then Wonder Woman 1984 wants to open as well. I'm not sure that the North American box office can handle it. Certainly right now they can't, because Los Angeles and New York are shut down.
Yeah, so that's about 10 to 15% of your annual box office comes from New York and LA. So basically, you're not only looking at limited capacity in movie theaters, you're also looking at two major markets that are just not there at all.
And they power the indie and art house market, of course, as well. So their size belies how important they are. They are the launching pad for the rest of the country.
That is
just
right.
The movies launched all over the world. You become a big hit in Korea. You become a big hit in all of Asia and perhaps North America as well. So big movies, they're doing well. They're making money. This is why we look at the worldwide box office. We've got two big films before we get to Tenet. At number four, however, is The New Mutants. That made $10 million worldwide, opening to mixed poor reviews. This was that X-Men movie that has been, you know, hovering in the background for a year or two now. It finally came out. The reaction has been, and it's probably not making that much less money than it would otherwise. I suppose it would have made a little bit more, but who knows?
Well, think about it. In years past, when a movie sat on a shelf for 2 years, you knew it was bad. You know, you knew that.
Now you were just happy to go see anything, though.
Well, no, now when a movie sits on the shelf for 2 years, you're like, oh, was it made in 2019, 2020?
Oh, right. Now it's a whole new issue. Yeah, you don't, it doesn't mean anything about all these other movies being delayed. Of course not. I'm talking fast today. I've had caffeine. All right. At number five around the world is Little Women, opening up in China. That made another $5 million. It's at $217 million worldwide. At six is the Russell Crowe thriller Unhinged, another $4 million. That's a little bit below $20 million worldwide. Then there's the Pixar film Onward, still chugging along in a few territories after being a long time off the screen. That made $4 million. That's at about $117 million worldwide. The re-release of Inception made another $3 million. The Korean film, Deliver Us from Evil. I've sort of just parsed this together. I haven't had a good, clear spelling out of what it's made worldwide, but this thriller in Korea, I think, made about another $2 million, and it's at $32 million worldwide. Then there's a big question mark. I wasn't excited to see The New Mutants, but it's on a double bill at my local drive-in with Bill and Ted Face the Music. I thought, well, that's worth it. The Bill and Ted will be harmless fun, and maybe The New Mutants will be okay, or at least distracting for 2 hours. So I was thinking about heading out to see that. I haven't done it yet, but it has opened in theaters, while at the same time, Bill and Ted is available on premium video on demand. It made about $1 million at the box office on its opening week. What did it make on premium video on demand? We have no idea. We probably never will. But if you've seen the numbers and you can tell us, call us.
Yes, you can write to us, dirt@showbizsandbox.com. That's dirt@showbizsandbox.com. And you can also call us, as Michael suggests. The number to call is 888-567-SAND. That's 888-567-7263. Operators are standing by. We're also on Twitter, @showbizsandbox is our handle. And we're on Facebook, facebook.com/showbizsandbox.
That's right. And we've got about five films below $1 million worldwide, but this is the world we live in now where we still care. Padre, no hay que más uno, dos. That film made another $700,000. It's at $12 million, and that is the biggest film at the Spanish box office this year. Then there's the limited release of The Personal History of David Copperfield. I highly recommend the novel. I do not recommend the film. That made about $500,000 in its debut. Then Words on the Bathroom Wall, the film that gets a thumbs up from Sperling's kids, that made another $450,000. That's a good haul because it only made a little bit over $500,000. It's now at $1 million at the box office. SpongeBob Sponge on the Run, the Canadians are big on it. That's only been playing in Canada. I don't know why. It's made $400,000 and it's at $3 million total. And then OK, Madam, this is another Korean flick, which I was trying to track down the movies that we had mentioned last week to see where they were at. And I was having a little bit of trouble. This movie just made a few more pennies. It's sort of fallen off the charts. It's at about $9 million total. It made about $150,000 this week. It was all about Tenet in Korea this week. Deliver from Evil managed to do a little bit, but that was about it.
Now, this weekend, because of course there's no movie theaters open, I actually saw a documentary that is opening in movie theaters next week, again, not in California, House of Cardin, or Cardin.
Pierre Cardin.
Yes. This is
Cardin. Okay. Yeah. And how was it?
I have to say, I knew very little about Pierre Cardin, and now I know a lot more, and he is a fascinating character. He's a fascinating individual, and he's 98 years old, still going strong, goes to work every day. He's a fashion designer, for those who don't know, and he wears it well.
Is it just an interesting topic, or is it a well-made film?
You know, I would say it's more interesting topic than well-made film. I mean, it's very flashy. Much like a fashion movie, I guess, should be, but it's very flashy. But it does cover even things like by the middle of the film, I was like, I don't know anything about this guy's personal life. Did he get married? Did he not get married? Did he have, a boyfriend or not? And
just about his professional life.
And then they did get into that. So they actually did, in the end, kind of talk about his great loves. And so it's really fascinating to see him both in archival footage, and then in, as a
movie you recommend?
Yes, I would.
Well, I saw a documentary film as well on Amazon Prime Video. I'm mentioning where I saw it just because otherwise it takes you ages to track it down. Though the site Sperling recommends, justwatch.com, is useful for new and current films and TV shows. It's not great for the whole catalog of stuff, and it doesn't do everything I would like. But I do turn to it, I must say, Sperling, full credit to you, when I'm trying to find out where some new thing is. Like I read about, Dead to Me is supposed to be good. Where is that? Got to look it up. Anyway, Rewind is on Amazon Prime. It's a documentary about child abuse. Like a lot of films today that are documentaries, it's filled with, tons of copious home movie footage because everybody documents their lives these days. So there's tons of footage. It will make you think of all the other recent documentaries about child abuse, but it's not particularly good, I'm afraid. It's an interesting topic, how abuse continues through generation after generation. It's certainly important, but it's not a good film. So I cannot recommend it. But
I can definitely recommend House of Cardin. The one problem is you will leave it thinking, wow, I have not done enough with my life.
Well, AMC has not done enough with their theaters. First off, they sold off at least 15 theaters before its merger to get court approval. Now they're asking the court to say, hey, we want to buy back 10 of them. They're basically in North America, I believe.
Yes.
There are two reasons they say. One, these things are going under and we have a certain legal liability to the landlord. I'm not sure what that is. And two, if we don't keep them open, they may close forever and that would be bad for the local community. That these movie theaters, if they shutter, no one else is going to step in right now necessarily to prop them up and keep them alive, nor will they necessarily open them up if they're still closed a year from now when we get back to normal, God willing. So they're saying, hey, and at the same time, like you say, they're selling off 9 Baltic theaters for $77 million. They're selling off that little mini chain because they say, well, we're just trying to fiddle with our balance sheet and make it look good. But look how much we sold them for. It proves movie theaters are a great business long term. We're just selling them off right now.
Yeah, who knows what the real estate is and what the real estate, whether they own the real estate outright or whether they're renting. The landlord situation is, they had to sell off these theaters because in general, there was competition or no competition in that market. So one would assume there's another circuit operating somewhere there. And now, I guess not.
No, they're that's why they have to get court approval. It's not like, things have changed, so now there's lots of healthy competition. They're just saying, look, they're going to go under forever. We're going to be on the hook financially, and these communities will lose. It's a movie theater. Who wins in this situation?
No, what I mean is when they first had to sell off, they had to sell off for competition reasons. Obviously, there's no more competition. And
competition reasons. They were going to become too big. They were going to be too much of a monopoly. It wasn't that there was competition. They sold off because they were forced to do the merger. They said, you've got too many theaters in too many cities. You've got to sell these off. They were forced to by court order or they wouldn't have been approved for the merger.
Right. Okay. Well, usually when that happens, it's because of one of two things. As you say, Michael, they're too big in one specific area.
And overall.
But yeah, but you know, like, hey, you have two theaters in, I don't know, Birmingham. Now you'll have four. No. Or it's because, you know, they're trying to stoke competition. In this case, I think it's probably former.
Who's they?
The Justice Department. When they approve these mergers,
you got to sell them off. It's anti-competitive. You got to sell them off. You're becoming too big. So they sold them off. Who cares what the reason is? They're asking, can we buy them back now? What do you think?
I think let them buy them back. Why not? I mean, unless there's, I'd have to see market by market, which theaters they want to buy back. But if they're going to go under, either find a buyer for them or let AMC buy them back and run them. Provide it with stipulations. They have to, you know, keep it open for a certain number of years. They can't sell it off for a certain number of years. In other words, if you're doing the community good, then hey, let's actually make sure that's the case.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Academy is trying to do good for the community, for the film community, by opening up the Academy Museum, which I think has now, the cost of it is up to $4.2 trillion, something like that. Anyway, they're pushing ahead. They want to open up sometime in 2021 now. Is that the deadline?
To
a museum devoted to film. It seems like such an obvious thing. It's surprising it wasn't done decades ago, but they've hit a new roadblock. The creative director, Peter Castro, is under investigation by the LAPD for sexual assault. Lovely.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, this is a museum cursed. I know they had good people they could have hired, and they didn't. They hired the wrong people to curate and do with their museum. Stupid fools.
Okay, so what did your application look like when you submitted it?
Hey, I hadn't had a college degree or any experience in running a museum is no reason to say I was unqualified.
Wait a second. You have a college degree, just not one in running a museum.
I do not have a college degree.
You do not?
No, I do not.
Oh,
am I not allowed on the podcast anymore?
Yeah, that's it. Your next paycheck will be pink.
I went to college for 7 lovely years. I found out exactly what I wanted to do with my life, which I certainly didn't know when I arrived in college. I didn't think I'm going to be in journalism, entertainment. I had no idea. I didn't even think I would want to be a writer. I just had no idea. I showed up. I took classes. I started to realize, working at the school paper, oh, wow, this is great. This is fun. This is good. I found a career for myself. I got great experience that helped me get a job in New York. I was there for 7 years, paying my own way through school. And after the first 2 years, I basically worked full-time, whether at the newspaper or this place called the North Central Florida AIDS Network, which was providing services. I was the only paid employee. I was an office manager, and that helped support myself. And I paid my own way through school. And so I was taking one or two classes a semester. And so I was taking, like, you know, graduate level fiction writing and graduate level playwriting and graduate level science classes, honors, this. And I wasn't taking the basic classes you needed in order to get an AA and move towards your degree. And I realized after about 2 years, I had no interest in getting a degree and spending that money. I just wanted to explore the stuff I wanted to. And I was only waiting for someone to move to New York. If someone had moved to New York after 3 or 4 years, I would have left immediately. I was ready for New York. But it took 7 years before a friend of mine finally moved to New York. And as soon as they did, I joined them 2 weeks later. And the rest is my sad personal history.
Well, now, speaking of history, you know, when we look back on this time, And I would urge people to go to celluloidjunkie.com and read Claire Beswick's piece on how we measure box office during this time period, and that we shouldn't really get caught up in the numbers. It's a really good piece.
Well, you mean compared to the past and the future? Well, of course not.
Yeah.
It's obvious that, like, clearly amidst a pandemic when theaters shut down, you're not going to say box office is, this is like looking at jobs. You lose 22 million jobs, and you say, we've added 9 million jobs this quarter. It's like, yeah, you've lost 13 million jobs. 13 million jobs haven't come back. It's not actually a big accomplishment to have people go back to work after a few weeks of being off. That's not actually a huge success story. You got to put everything in context. That's what we need to do with box office, of course. Absolutely.
Yeah, and Claire's point was that she was reading all of the stories in the trades and certain newspapers, and she was like, look, you're looking at this all wrong. But you asked me a question last week, and that was about IMAX and Tenet and how much of it was shot. Well, as I mentioned last week during this past week's CJ Cinema Summit, we had some folks from IMAX on, especially the person who worked with Christopher Nolan and not only shooting Tenet in IMAX, but also preparing it for distribution. And he talked about just how difficult that was. just over 50% of the film was shot on IMAX.
Good to know. Is that an event people can watch post?
Oh, yes, it is. If you go to cjcinemasummit.com, you have to register and give your email address. And that's just really for, we don't do anything with it. I don't know why we're doing that. But it really just to keep track and make sure that it's industry people that are watching or people that are affiliated with the industry. I think I saw Raul Buril in the last one of our listeners.
Oh, cool. Well, we just got a breaking news. New Jersey movie theaters can reopen starting Friday, September 4th. They will be capped at 25% of capacity or an audience of 150, whichever is smaller.
Well, I can tell you that even in a lot of the IMAX theaters, yeah, they're allowed to have 50%. They're not, I mean, when you look at the taped off seats.
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, they're just like, yeah, you two sit here, and then a quarter of a mile away, we're going to sit two other people. It's just, what's
the... I'll tell you, that IMAX screen sure is big. That's a big screen. If I could go to a movie theater and see a movie like Tenet in IMAX, I would let out a whoop of joy. I sure would.
I think you may be trying to telegraph something to me. Maybe that it's time for Big Deal or Big Whoop, our weekly segment where we discuss the top headlines in entertainment and tell you whether they're really important or just overhyped nonsense. I think that's what you're telling me to move on to.
I think you're right.
Yeah, well, in fact, our first story, you know, just when some people want to pretend big back-end deals from syndication are dead, and I think by some people you mean me, because I've said that, a hot sitcom comes to the rescue. Young Sheldon, not the older one, but the younger one, is the most popular sitcom on the air right now, and it's spun off from one of the most popular sitcoms of all time, The Big Bang Theory. Now, that show was a monster in syndication via TBS, but that was 1,500 years ago, and it also, yes, you know, it's like 1001, but not all the way to the other one. Mm-hmm. 1000. Yeah, okay. Well, you know, it also scored big bucks for streaming rights when HBO Max snapped it. Yeah, HBO Max. Yeah, they snapped it up. CBS, of course, owns the competing streamer, CBS All Access, soon to be renamed CBS something, or I don't know, whatever they're going to name it. I'm sure it's like CBS to the Max Plus or something. I don't know. But Young Sheldon already sold its streaming rights to HBO Max. So back to syndication. Instead of the Warner Brothers TV show going to TBS, it's going to Viacom, Nick at Night. And down the road, they'll be stripping it for local stations, just as they did for The Big Bang Theory. Is this a big deal or a big whoop?
Oh, it's a big whoop. It's the number one sitcom on the air right now. So, of course, it's going to sell for big bucks, and everyone's going to fight over the right to have it as part of their cable channel, local TV station, streaming service, you name it. But again, like I say, there is a lot of big money to be had. You can say, well, yeah, but that's the biggest show. Well, yeah, those are the biggest shows, are the ones with the most money. That's where you want a cut of the pie. And how many creators are going to be happy to have them, you know, well, we paid a little bit extra up front. Sorry, I didn't get a piece of the $1 billion we're making on the back end. I don't know. I think there's a lot of money being made internationally, syndication, local, stripping, cable channels. Those are still active players. They're still writing checks. There's still money being made.
Every time you say stripping, that a lot of money is being made stripping, I think, what you talking that's, about the women in Las
that's,
Vegas?
That's why my rap name is Magic Mike.
Yeah, well, that's great. Yeah, and by the way, you haven't lived until you've heard your 14 and 15 year old daughters singing WAP.
Oh, Lord. Oh, yeah. I don't want to hear about that. Keep going.
Thank you, Cardi B. Okay, well, now, if you're trying to see when Young Sheldon, by the way, is on the air, you might have opened your physical copy of the Sunday New York Times the way I do, and you might have jumped to their TV grid, and it's What's on TV guide. But you won't do it next weekend because that's the last time they'll be including a TV grid. Once pioneered by the standalone magazine TV Guide, then adopted by every newspaper in the country as an essential service, along with like the weather and a crossword puzzle and horoscope and comics, the TV grid is now a thing of the past for, well, almost everyone. Many local papers went out of business before they could even realize a TV grid had outlived its usefulness. The Gray Lady, aka the New York Times, well, the Gray Lady is slow to change. Bless her heart. But now, even she is saying goodbye to the boob tube info. So if your kids are listening to this podcast, explain to them how once upon a time people had to watch a TV show as it aired or they missed it forever. Much like we'll be missing the TV grid forever. Big deal or big whoop?
It's a big whoop, right? It's the end of an era. It's worth noting, but this has been a long time coming. It's so out of whack with how people consume television. It doesn't serve any real usefulness anymore, especially since there are, you know, hundreds of channels and a grid can only catch some of them. You know, you're showing them what's on CBS. If they're under 50, they don't care what's on CBS. They want to know what they can stream on Netflix, which is 1,000 shows. So yes, the grid really has. And by the way, if you're running a newspaper, trust me, do not leave out the crossword puzzle. If you really want to get in trouble, you can have the front page blank and you will get fewer phone calls and letters than if you drop the crossword puzzle. Like, where's the crossword puzzle? Where? It's like people will kill you if you don't include the crossword puzzle.
Well, okay. The Korean boy band BTS is bigger than ever. Big deal or big... No, just kidding. In lockdown, their fans are simply doubling down on their obsession with the supergroup and choosing their favorite album, song, and singer. I'm looking at you, J-Hope. Anyway, their new song, Dynamite, came out and exploded on the charts. See what I did there?
Mm-hmm. Keep going.
Hold for applause and or groans. Oh, I wasn't supposed to read that part. I'm sorry. YouTube said it's a world beater. That's what they said. Their first all-English single was viewed 101 million times. Now, that's pretty impressive.
In its first 24 hours.
In its first 20... Yeah, you stole my punchline. No, indeed. They also set another record when 3 million people watched online at the same time as the song made its world premiere. Take that, MTV. And by the way, take that. Okay. Come to think of it. You know,
I remember that boy band too.
Yeah. But then the story gets more interesting. On Spotify, it unofficially was streamed some 12.6 million times. But when the official tally came out, it was down to just 7.7 million. What happened? We're going straight to Florida to find out. No, just kidding. Spotify has a rule that individual streamers can be responsible for songs plays in a 24-hour period, but only up to a certain point. So fanatics might stay up for 24 hours straight playing the song on repeat to jack up views or listens, but Spotify will only credit them for, say, I don't know, 24 plays. I mean, we're not really sure what the actual figure is, but that's like really as good a guess as any. Now, is this fair? If a fan chooses to play a song obsessively for hours at a time, doesn't that count as a play? And by the way, my other question is this a big deal or a big whoop?
Well, it's a big deal. It just shows how, you know, how we're measuring hits changes so much. I should say Dynamite has hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100. It's the first song of theirs to top the U.S. chart. And of course, the formula for how they determine that changes all the time. Same with Spotify and other streamers. They say, all right, look, we got one person here playing the song literally nonstop on this device for 24 hours. We don't consider that genuine fan. You know, appreciate it. It's sort of a philosophical question, but I have to agree with them. That's a reasonable thing to put a cap on the maximum amounts that you can be responsible for spins for a song. That seems like a reasonable thing to do. But I was really excited by that stat that 3 million people gathered online to watch the song make its debut on YouTube. That's like people showing up at Fortnite for a concert. We've seen that stuff happen. 3 million people said, I want to be there. I want to be among the first people to watch that video. That is a genuine 3 million people around the world gathering to watch your music video. That's pretty cool.
Well, just like movies and books and music and video games and watching people play video games, sports is entertainment and big business. Believe me, concern for college students is not the reason football coaches want their players to take the field. It's the big buck TV contract. So, really, sports is a part of our beat, and that includes, by the way, Michael's favorite sport, tennis. And tennis is a mess. Some of the top male players have a solution, though. A new players' union. The number one player in the world, Novak Djokovic, and Jason Isner, and others, quit their position on the board of the Association of Tennis Professionals. They think there's an inherent conflict of interest in an association that includes both players and the people running the tours, the people hiring them, basically. Shouldn't they be negotiating against each other? They're planning their own union. They will maybe get together to take a photo of everyone on board to record this historic moment. Oh, and by the way, no girls allowed, okay? Yeah, it's on the door of the clubhouse. No girls allowed. Other top male players like Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal don't seem to be on board, at least not yet, big deal or big whoop?
Since like just today, I saw Federer and Nadal both publicly criticize this and said, we need more unity right now. This is bad. And why no women? Andy Murray also has been a big champion of women's players and tours and the success of the women's field. So they are absolutely opposed to this. So that's good to see. I mean, Djokovic is just an idiot in general. We just saw him a few weeks ago holding a tournament amidst this pandemic and getting multiple people sick because they even holding the tournament, they couldn't even do it the right way. They're hanging out with the ball kids and taking photos with them. They're partying at night in a club. Ah, ha, ha. This is so silly. All these silly rules. Thank God nobody seems to have died from this, from that particular event. But this is the moron you want to follow. Hopefully, the players will not do that.
Now, they're doing the U.S. Open this year.
It just started today. Yeah, it's just right now. There are no fans in the audience. They've gotten rid of linesmen on all the outside courts. There are just two big show courts where there will be lines people. There's always a chair umpire, but every other line is now being judged by electronic eye. So that's how they're doing the entire rest of the tournament. It's expensive, but it also keeps them from having to have hundreds of linesmen and referees together all the time doing all this stuff. It's expensive, it's difficult, and it's hard to keep people in the bubble. So they're down to like less than 100 linesmen and referees rather than hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. So that was a change they made. And so the players are there, they're staying in a bubble. If you are a linesman or referee, you have to stay like a particular hotel and you really can't leave. Like yeah. You can't go, I'm going to go to the city today. You can't do it. They have guards. They people go, no, you can't go. And if you leave, you can leave, but then you can't come back and you'll be fired. So they're going to extreme efforts to make sure it's safe. I don't know whether it's the right or wrong time. It seems like a good sport to do this in. It's not a contact sport. You know, you're going to touch the tennis ball. That's about the biggest fear. And that doesn't seem to be a big problem. So it seems like a very safe sport to play outdoors, non-contact. You know, I think they're going to be able to do it and do it responsibly and, you know, keep the big buck TV contract. But there will be no people in the stands. And hopefully there won't be any meetings. And these morons, I should say, they're like, we're going to get together and take a photo of each other. Yes, because getting in a big group and taking a photo is such a good idea. He learned nothing from his moronic tournament that he did a few weeks ago.
Well, he's now immune, so what's it matter?
Oh, he didn't get it himself.
Oh, I thought he did.
His coach and other people. I don't believe he did personally, but who cares? You know.
Well,
anyway.
Here's the question. What about the ball boys? And by ball boys,
there are no ball kids.
Oh, that's no the way ball to say it. Kids. Ball kids.
Yeah, okay. No ball kids. Yeah,
they're going to have to run after their own balls now.
Yep. Get moving, buddy.
Yeah, go pick that thing up. That thing ain't going to pick itself up.
I've been a lifetime ball kid. I had no college degree, but I can play ball.
Well, that speaking of ball, all of that stuff about tennis, that's really inside baseball. And in fact, it's time for Inside Baseball, where we analyze some of the headlines that have the entertainment industry buzzing. We'll explain what they mean for the business and, more importantly, how they affect you.
Hey, let me handle this because you should be commenting on it. This is more stuff about agents and agencies. We had the big news last week of Peter Michelli bankrolling a new firm, and then multiple other people have moved on to start their own firms and or announce clients coming to them, and they seem to be all moving into management. It doesn't seem to be anybody moving from a big agency to create a smaller agency. They're all switching from agent to manager. How significant is that? First of all, we have Philip Sun leaving William Morris Endeavor to form another management group. And that's where we sort of say, wow, this agent departure is turning into a deluge. Philip Sun is going to be, has worked with Donald Glover, Idris Elba, Naomi Scott, etc. They're all, I believe, on board with his new company. And he's partnering with Macro founder Charles D. King to form M88. The M is for Macro. And the 88 is a nod to Sun's Chinese heritage. The number 8 is extremely good luck, so they're calling it M88. Very cool. They are going to be repping diverse voices, and their first client is Michael B. Jordan. So, do you know him? You know, okay.
Philip Sun, you know, along with, here's the thing, it's big agents that are leaving. So last week, the big thing was not that so, yeah, well, there were two big things last week when Peter Michelli started his company, is that one, so many agents jumped ship from UTA and CAA and all
it
of
wasn't even
places.
It wasn't even people at one firm. You felt like, yeah, wow.
This was orchestrated, obviously.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
But also on the CAA front, the creative artist agency front, those were the heads of the motion picture talent division. So that's what's really interesting there. Now you also have something else, which is some of these agents represent talent like a Donald Glover or like a Michael B. Jordan. They have managers already. So you're right, jumping.
And now the managers are, they're like, wait, what? Like, they're saying, oh, we get half of what you used to get. Yeah, no, there's going to be big argument. I assume that if you have a manager, you're going to have to fire one or the other. You can't have two managers. Right. Well, so there's going to be a lot of tension there. But to more, my important is to look at the next person. Another person from William Morris Endeavor has moved on. It's Teresa Kang Lo. She left to start her own firm with a deal at Apple to kick things off. And I feel like when we look at the people, a lot of them who are leaving and the clients they represent, these are the people you want to point to when you're at CAA or William Morris Endeavor. Say, we're diverse. We've got women. We've got people of color. We're representing these people. This is like the future of your agency. These aren't the old white men who've been around for decades representing, you know, De Niro. I'd love to represent De Niro, of course. These are people representing the hot, young, diverse talent and the faces of your agency that you want to point to when you can say, we're not stodgy old white men. You want to represent the new young people coming up. You want to have these people at your agency, and they're precisely the ones that are leaving. That's got to hurt.
And what's really interesting about this is that you never used to see people leave agencies. People would be at agencies for 20, 30, 40 years. And I mean, you know, that long. Why? Because, you know, it's really hard to go from being an agent where everybody calls you back. At one, if you're ICM or CAA or UTA, everybody calls you back. When I was at CAA, I did a little experiment and I realized the error of my ways when the experiment worked, which was I was like, you know, everybody returns my phone call. It doesn't matter who it is. So I called the White House when Bill Clinton was president. I was like, yeah, just have them call me back. They called back. And that's when I realized the error of my ways. They called back within 30 minutes. And I was like, never mind. I answered my question. I had nothing. I was like, I didn't think you'd call back.
You could have started a nuclear war, you fool.
Yeah, thanks.
My agents are very powerful, but they were also boutiques. They were like, it was like getting tenure at Harvard. You felt like you had a job for life. You were protected, you were safe, and you were powerful. You don't have that anymore. Now you're just part of a big, massive multinational corporation. You don't feel part of a team on CAA or William Morris Endeavor. You're a cog in a giant machine, and it has a lot of parts. And they don't necessarily have your back for life. You don't feel like they're your family.
Well, that
right?
feeling of being in the center of the industry, that's really what you feel like when you know everything. You know who's being hired. Back then. But now you're working from home. You don't necessarily know all of that information. You're not having
meetings. That could be temporary, working from home.
Well, exactly. But that said, it also kind of lent the ability to know, you know what, actually, I can go out on my own. And you're not going to go to another agency. You're not going to start an agency. That's really, really difficult because you need to be franchised and there's certain rules and regulations around it.
Well, that happens.
Being a manager, you know, that's a different story.
I still disagree. I think they're choosing to be a manager because they don't want to be an agent. They think being a manager is a better thing. I don't think they're just choosing because it's easier. They're agents now. If they wanted to launch Endeavor the way they did in the 90s, they could launch another Endeavor.
Yes, they
I
could.
I think they're saying, I don't want to be an agent. I think it's a positive step towards something new, not a, well, that's just too hard. I wish I could be an agent at my own company.
I just highlighted that. But you're saying
it's too hard. And we've learned a few new things about Moxie, about the new companies launched by Peter Michelli, the name, the business plan to a little bit better, and some of their backers. So it's potentially called Moxie Media, which I think is a really bad name. Moxie. Just sounds like a 1950s word. That girl's got Moxie.
It sounds like a roller derby team.
Yeah, Moxie. Yeah, so their plan, what they want to do is to build big businesses around a star a la Reese Witherspoon. Where, you know, with they own a third, the star owns a third, and outside investors own a third of the standalone company created by that star. Reese, of course, has a book club. She has a production company. She has other stuff she's doing, many multi-arm production deal. You know, other stars like Gwyneth Paltrow have health food lines and makeup and, you know, all these sorts of things. My first thought is, how many stars need that kind of deal? I know everybody thinks, oh, I should have a clothing line. And it's like, that's, you know, do we need one from every star? The rare person who does that and likes that and succeeds at that, great. But it's kind of a full-time job to act in a movie. Not everybody wants to be an entrepreneur, but obviously they're going to be looking at the particular stars who want that kind of life. They want to diversify beyond just being an actor / director / writer. So that's interesting. They also plan to cap the number of people each manager represents. They're going to give you Tiffany-level representation. They're only going to be dealing with big stars who have plans to build an empire. That's clearly the idea. How does that business plan sound to you? Does that sound like a thing that like everybody, I want what Reese has. I want what Gwyneth has.
You know what? Yes, although it could work.
Yeah,
I think you're going to have some A companies like Goop, which is Gwyneth Paltrow. And then some companies where it's like, oh yeah, I guess that person is in perfume and fashion and kind of sort of where you kind of don't really know that they have all these side things going on. Kind of like Ryan Reynolds, Mr. I'm going to start a gin company or a vodka right. company. And then he sells it for $600 million.
Well, that's why they want to do it. But speaking of money, they need to be supported. They're going to have themselves and the stars and investors. One of their big investors is that they are...
Steve Cohen.
Right.
Sorry.
Who both champions Trump and is a hedge fund trader who has paid more than $1 billion in fines for insider trading. In fact, he's so notorious, if that's the right word, he inspired season one of the TV show Billions. So you want to be the hot new young company. You have diverse voices. You want to represent diverse people. You're the future of the industry. And you're backed by a Trump supporter who's cheated so much. He's paid $1 billion in fines for insider trading. How bad do you have to be to pay $1 billion in fines? He doesn't care because he's worth about $14 billion, but that's the person you think is going to attract you to young Hollywood. That's the guy you want to have backing you. That's already having people go, wait, what? Really? Are you kidding me? In fact, the Mets are up for play, and Steve Cohen tried to buy them a few years ago and they rejected him. A-Rod and J-Lo tried to buy it, and they just got turned down for various reasons. A-Rod, the face of cheating in baseball, as if you want the owner of a team to be one of the most notorious cheats in all of baseball. Well, guess who's now up for the team again is probably going to get it? Steve Cohen. He has to be approved by the owners, but one of the biggest cheats in Wall Street, $1 billion fine. That is so much money. We should not go, oh, yeah, whatever. You know, it's like $1 billion. That's a lot of cheating on insider trading. And this is the guy who's going to be the new face of the Mets and perhaps, you know, a big player in Moxie Media. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But they've already gotten some pushback for that. To me, it's just a ridiculous question, you know.
Well, certainly it will be interesting to see how over time this works with all of these agents becoming managers. Certainly they will be able to produce some of the content that their clients make or are in. So that will change. And that's really maybe how it will affect our listeners is that all of a sudden you'll start seeing, of course, as you said, all of these product lines, but also some of the talent actually become producers, which they often do anyway, but it's going to happen more and more.
Now, Sperling and I have our multimedia company, Showbiz Sandbox. Our healthcare plan isn't the best. You know, we have to give each other colonoscopies and prostate exams. It's kind of one of the less pleasant things, but it's important to get them done no matter how you have to do it. So people, if you have not gotten a prostate exam, men, or a colonoscopy, and men can get breast cancer and women have heart issues that they should think of, there's lots of things. Go for a checkup. Get all these things checked. 40, 45, 50, 55. So you got to get this stuff checked because that brings us to our obituary section where, of course, Chadwick Boseman, the star of Black Panther, has died at 43 of colon cancer after a 4-year battle.
Private battle.
Yeah. I love how they're spinning. They're like, oh, he's such a great guy. He didn't want anyone else to have to deal with his personal health travails. Like, yeah, he also wanted to get cast in Black Panther. Full power to him. I would do the same thing.
Well, he was already cast in Black Panther. I mean, when you look at the timeline.
Do we know that now? Yeah.
Yeah, because he played Black Panther in Captain America, a Civil War or whatever that was in 2015 that was shot. He was diagnosed in 2016.
But they're about to make a $200 million movie with you. They would like to know that you have colon cancer.
Let's put it this way.
I totally support him keeping him, you know, you get away with great for you, you know. God willing, he would have beaten it and be working for the next 20 years. So I'm not criticizing him, but, you know, that was kind of a shock. You're like, wow, what? 4 years? Holy moly. But, you know, he is a signal player. Look at the response to him. He played Jackie Robinson, Thurgood Marshall, James Brown, T'Challa, the Black Panther. He's played a lot of big names in movies, and he's, of course, the face of a huge franchise that now needs to be recast. And now people are online saying, well, don't recast that character. Make it a new person become the Black Panther, which happens in comic books all the time. So maybe they'll do that. And his most recent role was in Spike Lee's The Five Bloods. But he had a trailblazing career, no doubt about it. It's always upsetting to see somebody die young. dying of colon cancer is no fun. They just had a tribute to him by re-showing the movie and talking about Chadwick Boseman's career on ABC last night. That got pretty darn good ratings. So it's always sad to see happen, but it's a good reminder. Go to your doctor and get a checkup.
Well, not only did they pull their Sunday programming on ABC, which is owned by Disney.
Oh, reruns. It was probably reruns anyway.
But they played the Black Panther
right.
with no commercial interruptions, which tells you how not valuable that ad time
there
really
were no
is.
Commercials? Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. Oh,
but, Kevin Feige, the head of Marvel Studios, was getting a lot of blowback because there were rumors that he was kind of writing the Black Panther character out of the sequel to Black Panther. And people said, how could you do that? You know, Chadwick Boseman, he was the movie. You know, how could you do that? So obviously he must have known and kind of started to, if true, he must have known and started to kind of like send the film in a different direction, because he went from stage 3 cancer to stage 4 cancer over the last year. Stage 3 is already pretty bad. That means
in their 50s dealing with aggressive prostate cancer. So for the love of God, get checked.
Yes.
I wish I had health insurance so I could get checked. I wish I lived in Canada or Europe, but I can't.
You can't go to Canada or Europe right now.
That's right.
But you know what you can do? You can subscribe to our show in any podcast aggregator, Google Play Store, iTunes, Microsoft Marketplace, Stitcher. Please do rate and review the show when you, subscribe to us. It helps us out, actually. Again, all that information on our website, showbizsandbox.com, all the ways to subscribe to us, ways to call us, dirt@showbizsandbox.com is our email address. You can call us at 888-567-SAND. That's 888-567-7263. We're on Twitter. We're at showbizsandbox is our handle. And we're on Facebook, facebook.com/showbizsandbox. That information, as well as ways to subscribe to us, as well as all of the links to stories we discussed on today's episode, can be found once again on our website, showbizsandbox.com. Now, the music you hear at the beginning and end of each show is by the popular indie rock group MGMT. They can be found on their own website, who is MGMT.com. Michael Giltz has a website, and every week it's something new and exciting. What is it this week, Michael?
Well, it was going to be Wakanda Forever, but even the local storage unit place had that on their sign outside when I drove down the street. I'm like, well, everybody's doing that, so get a colonoscopy.com.
And you know what? If you can't find any of Michael's coverage of the entertainment industry on that particular website, why not head on over to michaelgiltz.com, where all of his work is aggregated. Some of my work can be found on celluloidjunkie.com. Until next week, play nice.